You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto and I'm glad you're joining us today. Art Factora, how are you, sir?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Today is a day that I thought would never come in my ignorance. I thought that this band that we had formed between Factora and Dotto was going to last forever. But apparently the band is breaking up. This is Art Factora's last show with us. Art, what's the deal? I get this memo saying, I don't want to work with you anymore, Steve. Goodbye.
Well, it was a better opportunity, and the other people promised not to make fun of me on a weekly basis.
Is it me? Did I hurt your feelings at some point? Because if I did, I have no idea where that could have happened.
Is it you? If I was to break it down into percentages, I would say you 97.
Okay, 97. Well, good. I can deal with that. So there's 3% fudge factor.
Yeah, 3% was it. It was just a better opportunity.
I can work with that. Actually, it is a phenomenal opportunity. Congratulations. And this is indeed, we're making fun, but this is indeed Art's final show. Things move very quickly in the radio industry, and there was a deal in place for our station to be sold, and that all came together. And a part of that selling of the station meant that there's always a bit of a churn as far as talent goes. And Art is moving to our sister station on the FM dial, and you've got like an awesome gig starting at the end of the month, right?
Yeah, it'll be starting on Monday. It's kind of a trade secret right now, so it's being let go right now. The rest of the world probably won't find out for another 12 hours, but yeah, I'll be over.
Should we not be talking about it? I was not told this.
Well,
but then they never tell me anything. They suddenly said, you're going to have to break in somebody new, some dude named Dwayne, who we will find out about later.
He's amazing. Yes.
Okay.
So as part of the deal, our radio cluster lost the rights to Virgin Radio, which is 953 on the FM dial. Here in Vancouver, and we are rebirthing the old Z95.3.
Okay.
So I will be part of the brand new morning show.
So you're going to be producing the morning show, and you're going to be doing on-air stuff too.
I will be doing, yeah, you'll be able to hear me more. Hopefully be doing some banter. I learned a lot about radio banter through you, Steve. So I suppose hopefully if they know where to pick my spots and my weaknesses, and they take advantage of that, they obviously probably learned a lot from you, too.
No, weed whacker. You have to listen. You now, when you step into the next job, you have a window of opportunity to be the bully instead of the bullied.
Huh. Really?
You take ownership. Are you the producer?
I will be the producer, yes.
You're the boss.
I'm the boss.
You're
right.
The boss.
I'm like the floor director,
that attitude.
Right?
You take that attitude. You broke no guff from any of those on-air talent. You take leadership and you belittle them early on. It's like schoolyard. You got to kind of carve out your territory to a certain extent. Huh. Now I know we're going to get lots of emails, Steve. No, that's ridiculous.
You are the worst.
But there's only so much room. There's a pecking order in every on-air endeavor.
And in
right?
every group situation.
Yeah, there is. But especially something like this where massive egos are involved. So you just got to be the biggest ego.
Okay. Well, I think I can.
Can you do that? Can you do that for me?
I will just emulate. I'll put on my Steve hat. And
now, if you blow it,
yeah.
And you have to come back with your tail between your legs,
and
you have to come back to our show, you can't do it when you come back, though.
Oh, okay. Right, so I take the Steve hat off and come back as Art on this show.
Now I'm kind of upset because we've got a good thing going, though.
Absolutely,
you know, it was. I'm proud of you. First of all, I'm proud of you. But the second thing is, I'm upset because now I got to break in somebody new, and I'm not sure he's going to be able to have as thick a skin as you, and maybe he's got a bigger ego than me, and he'll be the boss.
Oh, that's a scary thought. But no, you are in good hands. You are in good hands
okay.
with Dwayne. He's been in this building for. for many, many years. He's seen the worst of it. He loves your show. He's very excited to work with you.
Well, how can you not?
Absolutely.
Okay, so but we do have one special thing that we have to talk about.
Okay.
And when I met with your former boss, who you don't have to listen to anymore now that we think about it. He said that you can't do anything with us anymore. You're going to be so busy in the new thing.
Right.
And I hear that, but he's your old boss. He's not your new boss.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking App Thursday just wouldn't be the same without the Factora factor.
Oh, absolutely.
So are you going to find a way to play ball with us occasionally on Thursdays?
I'm in. After I'm done my shift, I'm a free man. And free men want to compete in things like App Thursday.
And you might have a better chance now.
Well, now that I can focus, you know, I'm not doing 12 jobs at the same time.
Now, the question is, should we let – is it Dwayne?
It is Dwayne.
Is that
yes,
Dwayne?
It is.
Should we let him play?
Well, I don't know if he's a big – I don't know if he's a big iPhone. I know he's not an iPhone guy.
True.
Oh, he's there right now. He's in the studio. We should point out, I'm actually recording this show today from my home studio through the magic of technology, so I can't see what's happening in the studio today. I was so upset to hear that you were leaving that I just couldn't even get in the car and drive.
Yeah, you didn't. You're one of those, Art, I don't want to see you. I don't want you to see me this way. Please.
Yes, I'm a broken man. I'm a broken host. So Dwayne is there in the studio. Welcome, Dwayne.
Thank you. It's going to be a fun time.
Okay, we got it. Well, let's measure Dwayne first of all. Dwayne, what type of phone do you have?
I have an HTC Android.
Yeah?
One of those.
Yep.
Android guy. And do you have a tablet?
No, I do not currently have a tablet. I got a couple of desktops and
all a couple of desktops.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a notebook?
Nope.
No.
No.
Ah, interesting. No. do you have a Bluetooth headset?
I do have one, but I rarely ever break it out.
Okay, well, that's good, because actually having one is okay. Wearing it is not.
Right.
See, do you remember how I started the show, Steve? You get to break in
a brand new phone. You had a flip phone, as I recall.
Did you have a flip phone? Yeah, it was practically a rotary flip phone. That's how old it was and useless it was. And now look at me. I got my iPhone on me. I got my iPad here. I got my MacBook. You've converted me. I am a techie. So you get to break in a brand new unknown techie.
Nice.
Now, future techie.
I know we should get on to our actual show, but this new opportunity is so fascinating. We've got fresh meat on this show for us to deal with. So that's awesome. So welcome, Dwayne. I'm looking forward to this. But B, who's going to be your tech expert on the new morning show? Are you going to bring Dotto on from time to time?
Wow. Look at this guy. I see where you're going with this.
Oh, yeah.
You know what?
I'm looking to expand the tribe, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. And yes, Steve, when we need someone to talk about what's going on in the tech world, I've got you on speed dial.
It's only going to be when tech luminaries die, I'm pretty sure. So-and-so died. Let's get Dotto on to talk about him.
That's if I can't get a hold of Mark Saltzman.
Oh.
I'm glad you're not in studio. You would have been very... I would have seen the glare on your face.
I like Saltzman. Don't do that. He started out with me. His very first jobs were on my shows, and now he's done very well. He's another one. I think I'm kind of a mentor of
you
people
really
in
are.
The tech industry.
You really are. You
of
take
media personalities.
They're little birdies, and then you force them to fly.
Yep.
And now look at us.
Yeah. Well, Kim, who worked with me for years, Kim Irvin, she teaches BCIT. She co-directed or was the assistant director for the opening and closing ceremonies of the Olympics. I've got some good pedigree flowing through.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have a show.
Yes, we do. Amazing guests.
And we've got some great topics. We're going to start things out. Mark Smith is going to be joining us in just a few moments. He just got back from a junket to Hawaii. And we're going to be talking to him about the different travel tech that he was using, which is kind of an interesting take on that. And then I have been, you know, Art, I've been working on this story, trying to find the right guest for this story for the last 3 or 4 months. I've got a Bitcoin guy on to explain to us Bitcoin. Do you understand? Well, we've had this conversation. You don't understand it any better than I understand it.
I kind of get the gist of it, but don't.
What do you think it is? Let's start. What do you think it is?
Well, it's virtual money, and this virtual money, in order to keep it from creating fake money or oversaturating the market, it takes really nerdy, geeky miners like M I N ER miners to create new bits of coin, and then people really just trade them kind of like stock, and the only value it has is how much somebody's worth, somebody is willing to, or what the public is willing to pay for it. So
yeah, it's like an agreement between two people what it's worth.
Yeah.
But it's the whole community. I think you're right. I think you're wrong on the mining thing. That's one of the things that I kind of learned in this interview is that's not 100% there. Okay. But I was in the same space as you. We've got one of these guys with two first names, Robert David, on, and I'm pretty sure through the whole interview I managed to call him Robert as opposed to David, which is a terrible thing to do to people, by the way. If you have a first name as a last name, do not name your kids with another first name. Give them a different first name.
Gotcha.
Give them something like, yeah, just as a, well, it's not a problem for you or I, is it, Factora?
No.
But if you change your name to James,
Art James,
don't name your son Jim, right?
Oh, terrible. Oh,
it'd be, well, actually, it'd be okay because people would never be wrong then. But having said that, I digress. We've got Robert David on, who is the founder of the Vancouver Bitcoin meetup. So there's a whole group of people that get together all the time in Vancouver and talk about Bitcoin. And it's a pretty vibrant community here in the city.
They're very excited if they got into Bitcoin back in November of last year. Very disappointed if they got into Bitcoin 2 weeks ago.
Yes, it's volatile to say the least. But we'll be having a great voyage of discovery, learning about that. So let's take a quick break and let's get Mark Smith on, because he's got some interesting stuff from Hawaii to talk to us about. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better.
Do you have a comment or question
for Dotto Tech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dotto Tech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
For the past few months, I've been looking for the perfect guest to come on the show to explain this concept of cryptocurrency, the Bitcoin concept. And this past week, I was at the Bill Conference, or the Bill Unconference, as they like to call it. And lo and behold, there was a panel consisting of about four Bitcoin experts. And leading the panel was Robert David, who is an expert on the entire space, so much so that he is the founder of the Vancouver Bitcoin Meetup. Apparently, people from Vancouver get together to talk about Bitcoin all the time. So I invited Robert to come on the show to explain to you and I exactly what this Bitcoin phenomenon is. Robert, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's really a pleasure to be on your program. Thanks for having me.
Well, now you're going to have to work, because you're going to have to try and get me understanding Bitcoin. And I've read a fair bit online, and there are still so many things that confuse me. So let's just start with the term cryptocurrency. What is that? What does that mean?
That's a great question. And I think to perhaps understand maybe not only what cryptocurrency is, but kind of the technology in this space, one of the best ways to think about this is in terms of what it is kind of from an information perspective. And that's where the cryptocurrency comes into it. And really what these technologies are is essentially an open source accounting system. So you have an open source ledger of numbered accounts. And the peer-to-peer network over which this ledger is shared works together to process transactions. And essentially where the kind of cryptocurrency aspect comes into play is that even though the credits aren't necessarily anything really unique or interesting, I mean, they're really just numbers in the ledger. You know, there's a balance in your account. It's there visible as a number. But the account numbers are actually where the cryptography kind of comes into play. And that is that every account number is essentially a cipher string, or the consequence of a mathematical formula. So really, the really amazing part of this technology, in a way, is that anybody can create their own account number. So that, I think, is probably the best way to understand how cryptocurrency is, in essence, cryptocurrency.
How do we derive value from it? This is probably the question that you get asked the most. You know, we moved, 50, 60 years ago from the gold standard countries had a certain reserves of gold that their currency, the value of their money was based on. It was based on drawing a percentage of that asset that they have. What is the asset that a Bitcoin is set against?
Again, a great question. I can tell that you've put some serious thought into this. This is one of the fundamental, I guess, economic underpinnings of what this system is perhaps hoping to be or evolve into. And if we look at the value that exists within the ledger, it's really not tied to anything tangible. So you could accurately say that it's a ledger of fiat credits. Now, that may sound like there's not a lot of value in the system, but really the value is in the system as it works together. So the credits aren't really inherently valuable, but the system itself is incredibly secure. So when you have credits in the system, you have essentially ultimate control over these credits, and that is where the value comes into play.
Does it come out of the fact that everybody that's a member agrees there's a value? Is it by that communion, the fact that I say that this is worth something, and if you say it's worth something, then we can attach value to it ourselves? So it's really in the holders of the currency that the value lies?
In terms of its value in other currencies or what people are willing to exchange it for, absolutely, it's the consensus among those participating in that market that determines the value as priced in whatever else you're trying to value these Bitcoin credits as. So there's the kind of the pricing value, which is basically a free market system.
And there has been some wild fluctuations in its value.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. This is one of the, I guess, consequences of a very early stage technology, very early stage financial asset, where you have essentially a micro cap stock is what you could think of it as being traded, and there are potential for wild and volatile swings in the market because it is such a small market still.
Mm-hmm. So for people that are thinking about engaging in it at any level, they really have to get beyond their bias or everything that they've been taught in the past, that currency is tied to a national interest of some sort, or that currency is tied to a physical object, a rarity like a gold or a silver or a platinum or oil or something like that, that it's not tied to a product, but it's tied to a concept.
Yeah, this is essentially where the stage of the technology's development is at right now. It's essentially the consensus on the value of this secure system that protects your balance. So that's essentially what this money is representing.
So the next question that I have to ask is, why do we need a currency that is not tied into the world monetary system, into the system that's already in place? We've got cash, so we've got the anonymity that people seek as far as being able to do exchanges, without being traced, and we've got all of these different online assets that allow us the convenience of doing commerce digitally. So where does Bitcoin come in? What gap is it filling?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's another very important topic. If we look at just taking, like, say, in general, at a very large view or scale, the global financial system, the problem that some would argue is the fact that the money is created as debt and issued as debt, so that really you have an economic system that can never fundamentally pay off the debt that is owed in that system. So there's this essentially a drain on economic activity within this system as people earn and work to earn money to pay off this interest that can never be paid off. So from an economic standpoint, the gap that Bitcoin fills is essentially removing the ability of any central authority, entity, organization, interest, removing all possibility of any centralized control over the issuance of currency. That prevents anybody from creating them from nothing ad hoc as they wish and completely arbitrarily. So it protects essentially all the holders of the credits against future arbitrary dilution of the value of those credits.
but we still have an increasing pool of currency available, which is, I guess, in and itself sort of inflationary because there isn't a finite number of Bitcoin available. You're creating new Bitcoin all the time through this Bitcoin mining process. That is something that completely eludes me as to how the process works and why it works. Will you explain Bitcoin mining?
I can explain kind of how it functions. There's a lot of different aspects to the finances and economics and business of it. But in terms of understanding what mining is, it's actually really kind of interesting to think of it from a different perspective and really understand that the term mining is kind of like a slang term that people use in the industry to talk about what they're doing. If you look at what the people who are mining, quote unquote, are doing in this network, what they are fundamentally doing for the function of the system is processing transactions.
Okay.
So every miner essentially validates all the transactions they get.
Okay, I don't understand that. So does this harken back to the crypto side of the currency?
Sure, you could think of it that way. Absolutely, where when you're essentially creating a transaction, you want to send money from, you know, yourself to a friend of yours. You generate a transaction that is a very straightforward financial transaction that is assigning credits from one account to another account.
Yes.
And you're digitally signing that transaction. Now, what you do when you submit that transaction to the network, you're actually submitting it to all these quote unquote miners, as I say.
Okay.
And what they're going to do is they're going to make sure you have enough credit to cover the transaction, that the signature is valid, that the accounts exist, et cetera, et cetera. So the best way to understand kind of how the system functions in conjunction with all this mining activity is to think of it as that mining is processing transactions. And that kind of really helps tie together the value chain that's being created within the system, because now we can see that the incentive for people to quote unquote mine these Bitcoin is there, and they earn that by providing a service to the system.
By providing processing power. So it's kind of like that old SETI. Do you remember SETI back in the 90s?
Absolutely, when
you shared your computer cycles for searching for extraterrestrial life? So it's kind of, we're building a giant mesh computer to handle all of the processing. Am I correct there?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, but are the transactions that complex that we need all of this massive processing power to do them?
Well, this is a very good question, because Bitcoin does it through what's known as proof of work. And this is what allows the network to come to consensus on the ledger itself, because what the clients on the network are agreeing to is that they will accept this proof of work from the next person who solves it as the next version of the ledger. So this is just really one way of doing it, though. So Bitcoin uses a proof of work, which requires CPU power to essentially create a secure algorithm for the system. There are now looking like there are other ways of doing it by providing other utility to the network. So there may be other ways of providing this proof. But for right now, how Bitcoin works, yes, you're essentially in conjunction with processing the transactions, the protocol requires you to solve essentially a mathematical problem.
So the pool of available Bitcoin that's out in circulation, shall we say, is only growing very, very slowly, if I kind of can read between the lines here.
Yeah, it's the issuance of credit is determined by an algorithm, and the algorithm was written by the creators of the technology, and it's not it's anything super magical about it. It is what some people would consider a good algorithm. The issuance of currency is halving every approximately 4 years. So you have decelerating inflation, eventually tapering off to near zero inflation, where you then have essentially a stable monetary base.
I am speaking, if you're just joining us, I'm speaking to Robert David, who is, amongst other things, the founder of the Vancouver Bitcoin Meetup. He's an expert on all things Bitcoin related, and he's trying to pull the mist of mystery away from Bitcoin for me and for, I imagine, many, many of our listeners. So we now know that Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency that is basically the value comes from the relationship that Bitcoin holders have with other Bitcoin holders, and that they all agree that there's an intrinsic value to this Bitcoin, and that helps to set and buoy up the value of it. Now, that's allowing for, of course, fluctuations. It's a slowly growing pool of money. Are there other ways besides mining to create new Bitcoin, or is the only other way to acquire it is to acquire somebody's existing Bitcoin, something that they have on their ledger?
Yes, absolutely. The only way to acquire the new credits is by processing transactions and securing the network.
Okay.
So all credits essentially come from people who have processed transactions.
Okay. So now let's get down to the let's actually take a step back and let's deal with a couple of the pop culture or the newsworthy. When I'm talking newsworthy, I'm talking Fox newsworthy portions of it. So there's lots of conversation about Bitcoins are not safe because we've heard stories of hacking, and a larger percentage of Bitcoins are hacked than other currencies. A and B, is it really just for drug dealers? So let's deal with A first. Let's deal with the hacking situation.
Yes, this is a very important subject, especially for people who are looking to get involved in the technology or to get some Bitcoin or to use it in any way.
I have to feel it's secure.
You have to feel it's secure. Now, the system itself is incredibly secure. There is no known way to defraud or game the system. But the system is a non-reversible payment system. So if somebody gains access to your account or to your money, they can essentially send this digital cash to wherever they want, and you lose control of it. So people are able to steal your digital money. This is a consequence, really, of the security of the system. So what we have to build, and this is kind of the ongoing endeavor of a large segment of the Bitcoin industry, the Bitcoin community, is to find new and more safe ways to access this system. And it comes down to really the management of these keys that access your account in this ledger.
Okay.
And to start with, these keys were merely stored on a simple file on a device, which is an incredibly insecure way to store this very sensitive information. But we've been evolving since then into a number of different ways of hopefully actually increasing the security, increasing the safety of accessing this system.
But that's still evolutionary. So there's still a way to go as far as getting it to the level of security that the Bitcoin community is going to say, now we're there.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Some of the biggest things that you're talking about in terms of mainstream stories is, of course, the last MT Gox hack the kind of ongoing problems that the largest Bitcoin currency market was having. They essentially lost most or all or a significant portion of everybody's money through what essentially was their inability to track people's accounts in this ledger. So there's definitely a lot of issues, and its security is the number one of them, among them probably, and people, I think, probably need to really think through at this point what the options they are to get into this space, because that was the largest market, and people who were using that market lost a lot of money.
Would it be unreasonable to say that at this point, Bitcoin is very much like a network of collectors, people who are interested and fascinated by the concept of cryptocurrency, who enjoy the discourse and the dialogue around what it's going to take to build an online monetary system, and they are more concerned with the process than they are concerned with the real value of the money in their lives right now?
I think that is a very accurate assessment of kind of where the maybe community or market sits with what's going on with the technology. There, as I say, there's a lot of challenges, and people who are in this space accept a lot of risk to their funds as a consequence.
Yeah.
So you have to have a high risk tolerance, and therefore I think in order to kind of deal with that situation, you have to look to the future of what we're trying to build with this technology rather than try and figure out kind of too much about what's going on in the present. It's a really early stage, organic, natural process that is evolving and growing.
So a responsible piece of advice for people interested in Bitcoin is to get involved with money that is not your mortgage, your food, or your children's tuition. Get involved with the money that is your hobby money, money that you might be spending on going to the movies and that kind of stuff, that if it's gone, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that has to be stated for those types of people who don't have the time or expertise to be able to understand a lot of the underlying security issues. If that's where you're prepared to be at in terms of knowledge, or that's where you are, then yes, you cannot. I don't think it would be irresponsible to recommend anybody to put in a significant portion of their life savings or something like this if they didn't know exactly what they were doing.
Now, what about the what about the idea that this is the anarchist's bank? This is all about terrorists and drug traffickers, people who want to be outside of the purview of the government. Is that hype, or is there some accuracy in that? Is that the kind of the tendency of a lot of the community, is that they don't have a lot of trust of government, or they're not embracing Big Brother, really?
I would say that last statement is true, but I don't think that's necessarily the overarching goal of everybody in this space. I think there's a lot of different perspectives in terms of what the currency is being used for. It's kind of being used in a lot of ways like any other currency is being used, which is unfortunately a lot of the time for illegal activity, U.S. dollars being, of course, the most predominant black market money in the world. So there are people who are going to use this technology however they want to, no different than any other technology. But I think also there's maybe just a slight misunderstanding sometimes in the media about the anonymity of this technology. It's not inherently anonymous, meaning that if you use this technology, it does not increase your anonymity. You are using it in a way that is traceable. So, of course, the more technically adept and knowledgeable about these systems can employ all kinds of methods to obfuscate their activity in the system. But it's not easy, and it doesn't turn on like a switch by default. So it takes some work. So I think it's less dangerous and anonymous and kind of black or dark pool idea as maybe the media would like to make it out as, but it's also definitely able to be used in that manner. Although I think what people will find out and is kind of coming to light now is that it's easier, safer, and more secure to use it in ways that are more legitimate and legal. So I think this is going to end up being a much bigger and better tool for finance and business than it will be for criminals. I don't really think criminals have a lot, at least, you know, your average run-of-the-mill criminals have a lot of technical ability, and I don't think any of them are going to use this technology for, you know, large amounts of everyday crime that are going on in the world.
Would the Bitcoin community react with horror or with glee if the Canadian big banks, CIBC, Royal Bank, Bank of Montreal, were to announce that they were getting on the Bitcoin bandwagon?
That would be very interesting to see, considering especially since they've initially taken the opposite point of view. But
yes,
I think the Bitcoin community would be very excited if that did happen.
See, I would be horrified, because I would think that Bitcoin would be one of the things that could break the stranglehold that large banks have on our economy.
Yeah, that's a kind of interesting idea. But also, when you think about what the technology is, it's finance, it's money, it's accounting.
Yes.
Who knows more about these kinds of things than people in finance, in banking? And I think if you look at the effect of the Napster and music sharing episode during the dot-com boom, where the music industry got crushed, and then now the movie industry getting crushed by peer-to-peer and online delivery, I think we've seen acceleration and acceptance of these disruptions by industries, and it might just be that the banking industry is the fastest to adopt and to adapt to this new technology. And I would not be surprised to see some major banking players or, you know, Wall Street finance firms looking to either adopt this technology or create their own variation on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That would and I'm not sure that would not be the beginning of the end of the interesting phase, and it would move into the how are they going to stick us with it phase. So let's cast our eyes ahead. Let's wrap things up by casting our eyes ahead 10 years. And I'm going to ask you one of the hardest questions. That is one that I, when people talk to me about technology, I hate to answer, but I don't mind asking it. 10 years from now, what are we going to be looking at as far as currencies in our life? Are we going to, is Bitcoin, are cryptocurrencies going to be, are they going to be married to our smartphones and the way that we do transactions by using you know, near field communications and tapping them on a register as we check out? Are they going to be an integral part of our life, and are we going to have multiple accounts, one in our country's currency, one in Bitcoin currency? Where's it going to be?
Yeah, obviously I don't know the future, but I do like to,
it's
of
your,
course,
it's,
talk about these kinds.
It's your job now to tell us exactly what it's going to be, and we will call you on it in 10 years.
I'll do my best. Yeah, we'll have to come back for sure at least once within the next 10 years and revisit this.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that the underlying fundamental disruption that this technology is bringing about, whereby we are now able to transact globally as a species without single intermediaries, in other words, in a peer-to-peer global network, is going to fundamentally alter human interaction at a very, very large scale because of this. And when we look in the future, what this technology is going to evolve into, it's going to improve, and it's going to get safer, more secure, easier to use. And it's going to propagate, I think, fairly widely based on the efforts of a lot in the community, the profit incentive in the industry, et cetera. And absolutely, we will most likely use for everyday transactions, probably often enough as not, the cryptocurrency of that time. And that cryptocurrency will most likely be more than one single currency or ledger. And I think we're also going to see the evolution of cryptocurrencies that is actually now kind of coming to fruition, or we're seeing on the horizon already, where we're using these ledgers for more than just financial transactions, but financial contracts, legal contracts, legislative bodies can write legislation in this form and decentralize kind of the information management of a lot of organizations, entities, even governments. So we're going to essentially see this technology kind of undermine a lot of pillars of centralization that our society is fundamentally built upon. And that is going to be completely and very dramatically disruptive, I think, to human society on a global scale. So in 10 years, we're just going to have better, more widely usable and easier to use cryptocurrency that's going to dominate, I think, a significant portion of the global economy.
Well, that is, I'm a big fan of disruptive technology as long as it doesn't make things too uncomfortable for me. So we will see. We'll see how it all pulls together. Robert, where do people go if they want to find more information? Can you give me a website?
Absolutely. For Vancouverites, of course, please visit our meetup group website, which is meetup.com/BitcoinVan. And you can also find out more about the work that I'm doing with our startup, which I'm happy to announce has just been recently accepted into an accelerator program in Silicon Valley. And that is at a website called monetsu.com. That's monetsu.com.
And we will have those links on our site. Robert, thanks so much for explaining this to me. I think I know more. I'm more confused on some areas, but I definitely understand some other areas far better than I did. So thanks so much for sharing. That is Robert David of the Vancouver Bitcoin Society. I'm Steve Dotto, and you are tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for DottoTech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. DottoTech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me online now is a DottoTech regular, Mark Smith of 30dayadventures.ca. Now, Mark has been boondoggling about the world on all sorts of junkets here and there. You're now like the travel guy as far as the bloggers go, Mark.
Yeah, I don't know how it happened, but I am having the absolute time of my life. I'm loving it.
Well, and I mean, you started out kind of doing mainly the food blogging stuff, and then you got on these 30-day adventure things where you were getting on benders for 30 days, and you just got back from Hawaii. Did you spend 30 days in Hawaii?
Actually, I spent 16 days in Hawaii, but the concept is I'm doing 30 posts on Hawaii.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't think anybody's going to bust your chops over that. I mean, I'm sure you would have preferred to stay for 30 days.
I would have, but to be honest with you, the astronomical cost of 30 days in Hawaii would have actually been, would have bankrupted me.
It would have bankrupted. But you can look at it as 30 12-hour periods in Hawaii, because you had days and you had nights. And if you even out the posts, I think you're totally legit.
And you know what? Honestly, if you were to take what a normal person would do on a vacation, I literally crammed 30 days worth of activities into those 16 days.
Now, you had a chat with me when you got back, and John Beeler joined you for part of it to help document it and do all sorts of things. But you said that you learned a lot on this trip about how technology was working for you, because you were on your own for quite a bit of it, and you're not really the most techie guy in the world. And implementing some of the new technology around, like new cameras and stuff like that, you had an eye-opening experience with some of it.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know, of course, here in Vancouver, you know, I'm on my iPhone all the time, and you know, laptops and iPads and all the rest of this stuff. But going on, going on a quote-unquote a vacation, and you know, do you disconnect 100%? You know, I mean, I'm on my phone 24/7. So when I'm on vacation, that's a very different experience. And so, and of course, this was a working trip. So I learned, you know, about staying connected when you're out of the country. What do I use a GoPro? Do I use my iPhone?
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's start with the connected side. How did you end up deciding to, how did you handle your telephony and your online when you were traveling about? Because I'm pretty sure you didn't just go with your carrier's plan.
No. So two things that I did. First off, all the places that I stayed at, all the eight different hotel properties I visited, I made sure that Wi-Fi was included in my package. So that's just the basic thing. So when I was writing, you know, I'd write in the hotel room, do all of that. And, you know, and that's how I was able to sort of stay connected when I was actually in the hotel room and writing and working.
Got it.
But when I was around the island, you know, I did my research and I knew about these guys before because I'd used their technology when I went to Idaho last summer. But I did my research and I ended up going with Roam Mobility.
Okay, which we talk about a lot on the show. Yeah. So, yeah, most of our listeners know about it. But tell us how Roam worked for you.
So Roam actually was interesting because I did have a little bit of a hiccup. So I have an iPhone 5. Mm-hmm. And so I originally went with the SIM card. I unlocked my iPhone. I put the SIM card in as soon as I boarded the plane in Vancouver, put it into airplane mode. I switched my SIM cards and, you know, off to Hawaii I went. What I didn't realize was that I think it's T-Mobile in the States, which is the network that Roam uses, does not actually work on the frequency of the iPhone 5.
Oh.
So I did have a little bit of difficulty when I was on Kauai, the first island, I was on edge the entire time. Now, luckily for me, I had also brought, because I do, like, all of my tech is packed into, you know, cables, chargers, etc. They're all packed into one handy little traveling case. So in that traveling case was my Roam Mobility hotspot.
Okay.
So what I ended up doing was I went online, transferred over my package from this, updated this the data package that I bought on my hotspot SIM card, and I actually just tethered to the hotspot. So I had 4G through my hotspot, but I had unlimited talks and text messaging on my phone through the
because you're on Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Well, no, actually, just because of the SIM card. So the phone part was fine.
Okay.
It was data that I had some challenges with.
Got it. So you were using your phone on the edge network for telephone calls and texting, and you were using your hotspot for all data, which is a pretty good way to go as well.
And you know what? To be honest with you, so again, keep in mind, I was in Hawaii for 16 days, and the total cost of what I spent was, I think, because I ended up having to double up and do the hotspot as well, it was about, I think I spent $75.
which you can run up in one phone call if you're using your carrier's package.
Absolutely. And the great thing was is that, you know, I can't reveal names because it's very personal information, but some of my, you know, one of my friends here back in Vancouver had some health stuff come up. And so, you know, I didn't have to worry about calling home to find out how things were going. And, you know, if I needed to make a phone call to be a supportive friend and do all that, I didn't have to think about it. It was just, I just picked up the phone and called. I didn't worry about my costs.
Yeah, well, we're big fans of the Roam, technology here on the show. Okay, so that took care of your internet and telephony. You mentioned GoPro, and you had some surprises around GoPro, because GoPro is the darling of the adventure tourist these days.
It is. And, you know, so again, keeping in mind that I'm not a super techie, you know, as your listeners will know, John Beeler, I mean, he's the master of GoPro. You know, so I invested, I spent about $700 a couple of days before I got on my trip. And, you know, I bought the GoPro 3 Plus black, you know, and got the casing and whatever. And as I went shopping around, like whether it was London Drugs or Best Buy or Future Shop, I looked at all of the places for all the accessories, but they were all cleaned out. So I'm like, I bought the ones I could. I bought a monopod. I bought, what else did I buy? Oh, I bought the clamp. You know, I bought a couple of those. And I'm like, oh, this will be perfect. I get to Hawaii, and then I realized all of the things that I wanted to do with the GoPro, I didn't have the right accessory for.
It's really about accessorizing. So give me an example of the sort of accessory that you were looking for when you were there.
Right. So the very first full day in Hawaii, I went sailing on the coast of Kauai up to the Nepali coast there, which is glorious. And we went snorkeling. But I couldn't take my GoPro because I didn't have a waterproof handle for it.
Okay.
You know, so like that little tiny floatable little yellow, you know, pod you know, could attach it to. And I mean, I had a metal one, but I wasn't about to take that into the water.
Yeah.
So, and I wasn't about to go snorkeling for the very first time with a GoPro in my hand, worrying that I might have had, like, you know, gotten a little anxious and dropped the camera.
So even though you had a waterproof enclosure, you didn't have the one that was designed to float back to the surface if you dropped it.
Yeah, and that I could, you know, put a strap across my wrist so that I could do what I needed to do. You know, and I mean, I talked to a bunch of you know, like surfer guides and all that kind of stuff, and they're like, the ocean floor of Hawaii is littered with thousands of GoPros.
You can go GoPro mining.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And yeah. So.
Okay. So that's a perfect example. So knowing what you're planning on doing is crucial if you're accessorizing properly with an adventure camera like the GoPro is essential.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, like, another great thing is that, like, the clamp was great because, you know, for example, I would drive along the coast to various adventures and stuff like that. So I was able to roll the window down a little bit, you know, attach the clamp to the window and then, you know, angle the camera so it could, you know, and then time-lapse photos.
So you get panoramic photos,
or
not panoramic, but, yeah, you're getting those nice adventure shots driving the beauty shots, yeah.
Exactly. You know, because I was like, a lot of times I discovered, you know, there were things that I wanted to capture, but I couldn't pull off the side of the road because there was no place to pull off the side of the road. So, you know, knowing that the camera was just there shooting it was great. But again, you know, I could have mounted it on the, you know, on the dashboard inside the car, but I didn't buy the little suction cup adapter.
Okay. So you were riffing there. But now let me ask you, you did a lot of video then on this particular trip, or were you taking stills with the GoPro? It was mainly for video, right?
I actually did. I did mostly video because I, you know, I mean, so John and I actually went snorkeling on the Big Island with Body Glove Adventures. And so John actually went and did the still photos in the time lapse, like every half second. I, on the other hand, bought, because I realized that I needed the right accessory. So I went and bought the chest harness, or as I've nicknamed it, the GoBro.
Okay.
It's not flattering if you're not, you know, zero body fat, you know. But I strapped that on and went snorkeling. So again, it was a great experience, but there was a lot of times where there was things that I wanted to capture. So I had to sort of like angle myself in the water, feet down, trying
Funny.
Whereas John could just literally, you know, because he had the little floatable, pod, he just turned his camera and took it. So
there you go. Okay, so that was GoPro. What other technology did you guys, did you engage in or did you learn about on this trip?
Well, you know, I used a lot of apps. So,
okay.
You know, that was something that was really, really helpful for me because I did. So, you know, in my 16 days, I was on 8 planes. I had 4 rental cars. I had 8 different hotels. You know, so it was a lot of, you know, planes, trains, and automobiles. And I used one app in particular to actually, and I think this might have been talked about on one of your App Wednesday shows, TripCase.
No, we haven't talked about that one, I don't think. What does TripCase do?
So TripCase is basically an app that you put all of your travel arrangements in. So it's basically kind of like a wallet for your itinerary.
Okay.
So, for example, now, you know, I have a travel agent here in Vancouver that I work with, but this trip was the Hawaii Visitors and Convention Bureau actually, you know, took care of the tickets and everything. So when my travel agent does it, all of my itineraries automatically uploaded to TripCase through their system. But when the Hawaii Visitors Bureau did my tickets, they just emailed me my itinerary. So what I was able to do is I emailed that itinerary to my TripCase account. And then, you know, within a matter of minutes, it uploaded into TripCase with my flight number, the gates, the confirmation number. And then 24 hours before each flight, I was able to go online, you know, through the app and actually do my pre-boarding check-in.
Okay.
You know, I was able to also email all of my hotel reservations to myself.
So typically speaking, I'd be searching either through my email or I'd probably have put this all in Evernote. But here was a nice, concise app that just pulled everything together and gave you the confidence that all of your trip details were together.
Exactly. It would break it down into, you know, here's the Kauai trip, here's the Maui trip, here's the whatever.
You weren't
kind of aggregates together.
You weren't constantly padding your pocket to make sure you had your tickets with you.
Exactly. Well, and you know, the other thing too, you know, like you say, you put it in, you put it in your Evernote. But then what happens if for whatever reason you're in a spot that doesn't have any connectivity on it? There are dark spots.
Yes.
So you're sitting there trying to go like, oh, what's that again? And then you can't find it.
Yes. Okay.
So that was like, you know, I mean, that's why, you know, they say it's always good to have a paper backup of your itinerary so you never have to worry about it. But this was a great thing that, you know, it was all there.
Good stuff. Now you're posting about your adventures there. How far are you into the tour of Hawaii?
Oh, I've passed the 4-week mark. I've actually only got 7 more posts to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm finished with Maui and I'm off to now. So the next 7 or 8 posts are actually all going to be about the Big Island.
So go ahead.
Oh, I'm just saying I had such a great time. I might actually just do a couple of extra posts just because it was so awesome.
Now, if you are interested in learning about Mark's adventures, it's at 30dayadventures.ca. That's the number 30dayadventures.ca. And he posts, you post every day, don't you?
I post every day, Monday to Friday.
Yeah, and so we're in the middle of a tour of Hawaii. It's a great series. I'm really enjoying it. What's up next? What's coming next?
30 days in Portland.
30 days in Portland, the weird city. There are more strange people in Portland, Oregon per capita than anywhere else in the world.
Craft beer, food trucks, and, just awesome.
Yes. The mystics tell us that meridian lines converge on Portland. That's why it's such a strange place. I bet you come back with a new philosophy.
Well, I'm going to be able to answer the question, do you know the name of the chicken, what farm it came from, and the farmer that, killed it that's on my plate?
Oh, joy.
Yeah. You know, you've seen Portlandia, I'm sure.
No, actually, I haven't. So you completely caught me with that cultural reference, but it sounds awesome.
Yeah, Portland has some funny folks in there.
Good stuff. Well, have a safe trip, Mark. We'll look forward to getting you back. You got to join us once again for App Thursday. It's on Thursdays now.
Oh, it's on Thursday. Well, yeah. This is what happens when I go to Hawaii. I lose touch.
Yeah, indeed. But don't tell Beeler about this app because you might be able to win.
Awesome. I'm keeping it in my little suitcase.
Mark Smith, 30dayadventures.ca. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Steve. Have a great day.
DottoTech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe
you. Do you have a comment or question for DottoTech?
Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. DottoTech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
So after, what is it, 140, how many is it that we've done here? After 145 shows, this is the final installment of the Factora and Dotto Tech Show.
This is a sad day.
It's a happy day. It's a happy day. You're flying free of the nest. Spread your wings, Art. Spread your wings and fly.
They're spread.
Okay, good. And fly. Don't forget to fly.
Oh.
And so you're at Zed. What is the call numbers? What's the numbers?
95.3.
What time do you start work in the morning?
We will be on air from 5:30 to 10 a.m. Don't laugh.
So I'll tune in about 7:30 or so and hear how you're doing on Monday.
Great.
Okay. Art, it has been a pleasure, sir, and an honor to work with you. You're a true pro, and I know you're going to just excel in your new venture.
Thank you, Steve. I will continue listening to Dotto Tech every Thursday at 7.
Every Thursday at 7. Thanks so much. On behalf of Art Factor, I'm Steve Dotto. Thanks for tuning in. We will see you next week right here for more Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.